Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Please subscribe to the podcast, share it, rate, review, all that good stuff. Follow on every platform you can. If you're on Spotify already, pop over to Apple Podcasts and give me a subscribe there. You can also just tell Alexa, play the Aaron Bender Podcast. That works too. Also, we are now on YouTube. I'm posting exclusive video content you cannot see anywhere else. Yeah, I post some short clips on IG, some on Twitter, but YouTube has those long clips you can't get anywhere else. Head to AaronBender.com for all the links. Before we get to my conversation with Houston meteorologist Star Harvey, a little about my story. I'm a widow dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job, then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Before Star Harvey was a meteorologist at CW39 in Houston, she was a reporter and did the weather at KREX5 in Grand Junction, Colorado. But before that, she was one of my students at California State University Northridge here in Los Angeles, and Star lived up to her name, still does. She went from an on-again, off-again college student to single mom to standout university graduate to making one of the biggest TV market jumps ever, from 187 to 8. It's a testament to her drive, ambition, and faith, not only in God, but ultimately herself. I'm going to start by just telling you how proud I am of you and the work that you've put in and the place you are in life, not just because of how you got there and the fact that you're there, but the idea also that this is nowhere near the end. This is nowhere near your destination.
Right. So I'd like to thank you. It's honestly, I know it probably sounds like so cliche, but you know, it's the, like, I guess the passion and the dedication that, like, my professors, like you, you know, that relationship, that, you know, that extra, you know, like in my ear, writing me, telling me this, right. And you know, all the, you know, what do you call it? I guess the realness, you know, the keeping it real has played a big part in my success, I think. And yeah, it's still so surreal to me knowing that I've only been in the game for about close to 3 years, a little bit over 2.5. And I'm just scratching the iceberg.
How old were you when you had Bryce? Because Bryce is going to be 9 this year.
Yeah. So I had a Bryce at 25. I didn't draw a blank there. I just, you know, I was going to say kind of older, you know, and I think just, you know, being from Los Angeles and, you know, this new generation, I know people that are, you know, and not just my friends, people that I went to school with that had babies, you know, at 19, 20 years old.
Right.
So for me, I feel like he came along pretty late, but, you know, right on time, definitely what I needed. So I was 25.
Many people are done with college. They've already started their first jobs, maybe onto their second market like you are now. But what was going on by the time you were 25, take me through that whole process. And also the idea that, did you know at that point that you wanted to get into TV news, you wanted to get into eventually weather? Where were you at in life?
Right. So prior to finding out I was going to have a baby, you know, because it was just as much a surprise to me as everyone, as everyone around me. No one, if anyone, you could go back, you could ask my parents, my grandparents, my friends, everyone would have said, we never would have thought Star was going to have kids, you know? And mostly because I didn't really think I wanted any until he got here. And for me, up until I had him, so dating back like pre, you know, 25, I had, you know, born and raised in the Valley, but from LA. That's a whole nother story. But you know, born and raised in the San Fernando Valley, I I had been in and out of college since I, you know, graduated high school. So I always attempted, you know, I had went to Pierce College, Valley College, Mission College, and, you know, I was never able to complete it. You know, I'd go for a semester here or there and I'd get bored. Not only that, I wanted to make money. So initially, right out of high school, I hopped into an amazing job. You know, I was working at a bank. And, you know, to be 17, 18 years old, you know, in LA, making anywhere from like $25 to $30, I was like, oh, this is great. I have no bills, you know? Right. And so that's a big part of what kept me, you know, from going, you know, and completing college was I wanted to make the money. I wanted to move out of my parents' home. I wanted to have my own car. I wanted to be able to shop and all of that good stuff. And I also wanted to travel. And so I spent a lot of my time from the time that I graduated high school up until I got pregnant with Bryce. I got pregnant at 24. So up until what, 17, 18, I graduated into 24. I had traveled outside of the country, I would say probably a dozen times. So
wow, you know, every year
I'd make it a point to travel twice. So I've been to Thailand and Bali, Costa Rica, Singapore.
If you could snap your fingers right now and go back to one of those places that you visited between high school and Bryce, where would you go?
I would go back to the Dominican Republic or Thailand.
Why those places?
So the Dominican Republic, I would say the DR, just the food, one, the water. You know, I'm so used to seeing like Malibu Beach and Santa Monica, yeah. You know, like, oh my gosh, the dirtiness.
Cold, dirty water you can't even see through. You don't even want to go in because you don't know what's in there.
Absolutely not. I can tell you that I've probably, being raised in LA, I've probably been in that beach water probably like two or three times.
I can't do the beach here. I don't like it. It's one reason I don't like the beach is it's so cold. It's so dirty. Uh-huh. And it's unfortunate because the pictures and the video and just pulling up to it, you're like, wow, this is amazing. It's gorgeous. No, it sucks.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Unless you travel up to like Paradise Cove, it starts to get pretty nice. Yeah. And you know, the cabanas out there. And if you want to just have like a bougie day and like.
When I worked in Miami, I worked there for 3 years and I was so averse to going to the beach there because of my experience here in LA. I probably went to the beaches in Fort Lauderdale and Miami 10 times, 12 times in 3 years, because I was so turned off by what I thought the beach could be. And then when I actually got in there, it was like bathwater. I was like, oh, bring me more of this.
not pretty at all. So
definitely. Why do you think that you were, I know you said you were bored, you know, you'd go for a semester here and there at all these different junior colleges around the San Fernando Valley. Why do you think you were so bored?
I didn't know what I wanted to do. Take that back. I knew what I wanted to do. I did not know that it was obtainable. I always knew that I wanted to be on TV doing news. It went from wanting to be an anchor when I was younger to, you know, oh no, I want to be out in the field and I want to report, you know, but, you know, growing up and, you know, what my family comes from and how I was raised, you know, a lot of that didn't look like what I wanted to do was possible, you know? And so for me, it's kind of like I'm going to school, going to college, in and out of college with the, I guess, the mindset of not being confident. Like, oh, you know, like this is just something to do and I don't even know if I can really do it. And so it was boring because I didn't know that I could achieve what I was actually setting out to get. And so, yeah, fast forward, I had Bryce. And for me, I, you know, pregnant with Bryce, I definitely worked. And Bryce's dad and I had been together for years. We'd been together since we were teenagers.
Yeah.
And so we decided that when I got pregnant, I had a high risk pregnancy. And so I decided, I think when Bryce was about 4 or 5 months, that I wasn't going to work anymore. And so this is someone who, we never lived together. I was always lived on my own, left my parents' house at I think like 18 or 19 years old. I paid all my own bills. you know? And so a very independent person, and then that's switching to, okay, because I am with child, because I'm pregnant, you know, I have to make these adjustments. You know, I had a very high risk pregnancy. And so at 4 months I stopped working. And so I had to transition into allowing someone else to take care of me. And, you know, that was one of the most hardest things to do.
I bet.
I come from a single mom household. My mom is a single mom of 7 kids. And so just to see how she, you know, worked everything. And, I don't even realize it until I got older. Like, oh, my gosh, there's so much of her like inside of me. And it's in the everyday things that I do. And I know a big part of my independence comes from that.
Yeah.
And so I had to sort of, you know, take the back seat and allow for, you know, someone to allow me to put my feet up. And it was the most uncomfortable, one of the hardest things I ever had to do, like I said. And so fast forward, I had Bryce. And I think when Bryce was just a few weeks, Bryce had to be no more than like a month, 2 months old. I decided that I think, oh my goodness, I have a kid. Like, I just gave birth to a whole person and I'm responsible for a whole person. Like, this, you know, in and out of school, you know, and I, like I said, I've always made good money, or what I thought was good money. And, you know, I was okay with the basics. And then, you know, once I had a kid, I'm like, you know, the basics are not going to float anymore. I don't want to live check to check. I don't want to, what if this company shuts down? I don't want to lose my job. One of my biggest things that I always say is like, I wanted to give my son someone, like a mom that he could brag about.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give him a mom that he could brag about. And I think, you know, for, you know, like giving birth to him, I think that was like one of the most pivotal moments in my life. I call him literally my sunshine, because I'm just like, whoa, like this light went off, you know, and it opened up a whole new, you know, can of like, what is this? You know, and I can't explain that feeling. It's just something that was innate and it just came. It's like, pop the baby out and listen, I don't know. I got to do something different. And
how much do you, feel know, like, because we've had conversations about God's plan and yeah. God's gifts, how much mm-hmm. and how long after that do you feel like it hit you that the reason you never progressed in any of those junior colleges, the reason you were bored, the reason you never went straight into TV news, there would be no Bryce. There right. likely would not have been a Bryce. And Bryce comes,
yeah.
lights click, everything just yep. says, okay, now's the time.
Yep. So I'm a very like firm believer in Jesus Christ. And so I'm not like all crazy religious. I'm a very spiritual person. And I think, you know, around the time that I had Bryce, you know, I started getting closer to, you know, like God and, you know, my spirituality. And what that meant for me was being more intentional and allowing myself to be led, you know, understanding that I could honestly achieve anything, you know? And so I still haven't put the pieces together. As I said, I'm still going through it every single day, you know, to where it's like, you know, I pray every day, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day.
Same. Oh, and, so it doesn't matter. If there's, there's some doubt, if there's some sadness, if there's some disbelief, or if there's a moment where I just say, oh, thank you. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to wait until things go poorly to pray. Mm-hmm. You can pray and say, thank you for whatever it is.
Yep. And, you know, I oftentimes like I've been like, you know, I've had people come at me on it. Well, how come you give so much of your, you know, success to God, you know, or how come you credit God so much for the success? And it's, I've had things happen to me in my life that make no sense. They don't add up. For instance, me landing my second gig here, you know, in Houston, it doesn't make sense. And I could walk myself through it. I could walk anyone through how this happened, you know, because there is, you know, there was a whole like you know, a boom, boom, boom as to how it all like went down.
Right.
But even still, when you see it on paper, it does not make sense.
Yeah. As a professor of journalism students, you generally tell people you spend 2 to 3 years in your first market, 3 to 5 years in your second market, and only then will you have the experience necessary to even apply for a major market position like what you have now in Houston after just barely two plus years in Grand Junction, Colorado. Market size, what, 185, 187?
187.
Yeah.
Yeah, 187. And, you know, even, you know, taking that step back, and a lot of people don't know is, you know, Bryce's dad and I ended up splitting, I want to say when Bryce was maybe 2, and I was still in school. You know, I was, you know, I could have made the decision. It was extremely hard. I had to make a decision. Okay, how do I bounce myself back on my own feet? You know, and a lot of pride came along with that. You know, I'm living in someone else's home. I'm allowing someone else to pay my bills. I'm driving someone else's car. I had let go of all of that to be a stay-at-home mom, which I do not regret any of it, because it's allowed my son to, you know, be as cultured as he is, be as expressive as he has. And anyone who knows Bryce would be able to put meaning to my words. But it was the luxury of having those 2 years off. It gave him that, you know? And so
your name might be Star, but we've all agreed that he is the star. I mean, let's not get it twisted.
Absolutely. He is every bit of it. Yeah. I literally should have named him after me. Like, how cool would that have been? I didn't stop going. I kept going. I caught the bus to school. I caught the bus up and down Sepulveda.
How many buses to get to school?
Okay, so let's say, for instance, I live here.
I know you remember the numbers, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to say daily, I would take 4 buses one way and 4. So about 8 buses a day. I'd catch the bus 8 times a day, and I would do that on average 3 to 4 days a week.
Sometimes with Bryce.
Oh, yeah, for years with Bryce. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We lived in Sherman Way. I lived in Sherman Oaks. Bryce went to school in Northridge. So I lived in Sherman Way, had to catch the bus to Northridge, had to get back on the bus in Northridge and catch it all the way back to, Valley Glen?
Yep.
Where Valley College is at. Do school, get back on a bus, stop at home because by that time Bryce wasn't out of school yet, and then get back on a bus again, go to Northridge, and then get back on a bus at Northridge and bring him back to Sherman Oaks. I did that for years. I had to figure out, you know, when I first started, I couldn't work full time. A lot of people don't know this, but I was on EBT and I am not ashamed of it. Right. I received food stamps. I received lots of financial aid and help to get me through those first few years to where I was able to be like, okay, I can balance a baby, I can balance school, and I can balance finally going back to work full time. And, on top of that, I wanted to give Bryce the best education. I didn't want to just shove him into, you know, this little rinky dink school that is in LAUSD, you know? So I found a way to make enough money to put him in Montessori, private schools. And once I got to CSUN, I eventually got back on my feet, was able to get us our own apartment, and we eventually got another car. But we did do the bus thing for about 2 years, a little bit over 2 years. And even in between then, my car would break down. Even when I was at CSUN, sometimes I'd have to take the bus. I lived right across the street from CSUN, but then again, Bryce went to school all the way somewhere else. And so we did that for a while, and I forgot where I was headed with this.
just all the work that went into it. And
there's been so much that went into it. I feel like I could talk for days about everything that I had to go through to get where I am. I remember small instances. I remember those breakdowns, you know, sitting in my bedroom crying. Oh my goodness, I'm a single mom. Oh my goodness, I need to make sure that I maintain this 3.5 to 3.4 or higher. You know, I need to make sure that I'm getting 12 units at a time so that I qualify for financial aid.
Right.
And, you know, it was a lot. And I spent many days on my knees praying, many days crying, many days reaching out to my friends. And I didn't stop. I'd bring him to class. I'd take him to school with me. I'd drop him off to some professors. I'd take him in other classes. You allowed me to do that. I had some professors that stopped me at the door. They're like, there's no way you're bringing this kid into class. Yeah. Absolutely not. And I'm like, well, what do I do with him? And they're like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, you know? And I had a professor that failed me. I explained my situation. I would show up. I have to bring him with me. And if I can't bring him with me, I can only come to school twice a week. And they failed me and had me write a statement as to why I felt like I deserved to pass this class. And I did it. You know, I wrote this exceptional, you know, statement as to, I busted my butt. I work hard. I show up with no excuses. I don't bring him with me as an excuse, or I don't not come because he's an excuse. I bring him with me to show up and do the work like everyone else. And right. Some professors weren't feeling that, but it didn't stop me, you know. And for every one of those, there was a professor that was on my team and recognized, you know, like, this girl's going hard and we're going to support her.
We talked about how after Bryce came, something clicked. What do you feel mm-hmm. like that was? Because you spent years not thinking that you were good enough, not thinking that what you wanted was obtainable. What changed?
Honestly, I don't have a word for it. I can't remember anything other than it literally being like the grace of God. I can't say there was this moment and it just, this is what it was, you know. It was literally, I had a baby, and I think I can put into perspective like how I grew up. You know, I have, you know, where my parents' education stopped at, where I come from, and you know, what I was subject to every day, and knowing that I don't want my son to, yes, we live in the Valley. It's a better neighborhood than South Central, but you don't just, so what? You live in the Valley, you know, your kids still have the opportunity to turn down the wrong streets, you know? And for me, that's what a big part of it was I have to give him something different. I have to be the best parent that I can be, you know? And for me, I had a great childhood. My mom, that woman is the goat. She is a beast.
You said single mom of seven.
Single mom of seven. I have one brother and I have five sisters. My mom had twins twice. And just to watch that woman get up and go to work every single day, put a roof over all of our heads. And even now when I sit back, I'm like, it's insanity. I have one. And I'm probably never going to have any more. Who knows? I don't think I will, but maybe God will have different plans. But
let's go back to 19 and 20-year-old Star. You didn't know you'd have Bryce. So don't even start right. with telling me that you know what's going to happen. Don't even start.
Right. All right. Yeah, no, watch, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying that goes tell God your plans and he'll laugh.
Yeah. Mom's listening to this right now. I know she is, because I'm going to send her the link. You're going to send her the link that I did this podcast, blah, blah, blah. Tell your mom right now what you think of her.
Ooh, you're trying to get some tears rolling here. So if I'm being 100% completely honest, as I always should, it's a level of appreciation that I had to find. Like I had to find the appreciation. I had to realize that my parents did the best they could with what they had. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I was literally, my parents are from the hood, literally the hood. And, you know, I grew up violence, drugs. My parents didn't do drugs, but I was surrounded by
just
it.
Around you, yeah.
Not just around me, you know, guns and gangbanging, and you know, and so being subject to that, I had to have a certain amount of, I don't even know the word. I had to have a certain amount of, you know, because there's two ways when you can go when you're brought up in situations like that, and I've seen it. Either it's in front of you and you're gonna be attracted to it, or you're gonna see it and you're gonna be like, I don't want anything to do with this, you know? And that's the route that I decided.
How did you make that decision?
That decision came from all of the hurt that I saw, the hurt that, you know, I seen my mom go through, the hurt that I seen my dad go through, the hurt that I seen my brother go through. Every other week, I was losing a cousin, you know, every other week we were, you know, putting someone in a grave. And these are my first cousins. These are cousins that I grew up with. My mom has 8 brothers and sisters. And like I said, my mom has 7. Well, guess what? All of my 8 aunts and uncles have 5 to 6 kids as well. So these are all my first cousins, you know, and this is where I'm getting dropped off at every day after school. So I went to school in the Valley from 8 in the morning until 2-3 in the afternoon, but 3 o'clock, oh, better believe we were dropped off like in the hood, you know, and free for all, you know? And so I think it, you know, if my mom was watching, I think my message to her would be, you know, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for her doing what she knew with what she had. And for her, that was removing me out of a situation and showing me that I could have better, that there are opportunities to make other choices. And I think that if I didn't grow up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, made the friends that I, you know, made, I wouldn't be where I am. So I'm definitely thankful for that. I'm so thankful for the struggle, you know. I have plenty of friends that, you know, I guess you could say like grew up with a silver spoon in their mouths. And I didn't have that. I worked for every single last thing I had. Like my parents didn't buy my first car. My parents didn't put, you know, crazy like amount of money in a savings account for me. That didn't happen because we did what we had with what we had, you know? And so I don't regret that. I don't wish that I had a different upbringing. I don't wish that I grew up different. I'm so appreciative of the struggle because it's literally allowed me to maneuver through every point in life. My street smarts, you know, a lot of people that I know would probably say like, oh, Star's so nonchalant, you know, like Star's very like careless or carefree. And a big part of that is my mom. My mom is the most sweetest person, but don't don't mess with her because she'll go from 0 to 100. You know,
and I know for a fact that the face you just made, you did not have 10 years ago. That is the mom face. That is you might have practiced it because you saw your mom doing it, but the face you just made is not a face that anybody but a mom can make.
Yeah. And literally I say, you said it, I say little things and I hear myself and I'm like, ew. I sound just like my mom. I remember when she was saying that to me, and in the back of my head, I was cussing her out. And I'm like, I literally sit here some days and I'm like, Bryce is probably upstairs calling me all kinds of, you know, what's and you know, who's, you know, just because I remember being that age. But all in all, I'm as an adult, I couldn't see it a lot of the times growing up. And I remember going through some phases or stages in my life where I was angry because I didn't have what I thought that I needed to be successful. You know, I didn't have these parents that were lawyers and doctors and, you know, why couldn't I be born into a rich family? You know, I remember growing up kind of feeling that way, or why can't my mom be Beyonce? But my mom's Lachelle, and I'm so grateful for everything that she's instilled in me, the independence, the drive. I do, like, all of that comes from her, and the struggle. I'm thankful for the struggle because it allows me to get through all of the situations that I find myself in, even still to this day, to get through those.
As the mother of a soon-to-be 9-year-old son, what kinds of conversations have you started having with him about what the world is unfortunately like for him, for you, and other people of color?
Yeah. So That one's probably a hard one for me. Like, I thought that my mom would make me cry, but obviously Bryce is my soft spot. And I've had some of the conversations. Still to this day, I'm rocked every day. You know, I'm standing. Yes, I do weather. You know, and a lot of, there's so many things that I see in the newsroom, you know, that are going on and the stories that we're, you know, putting together and that we're feeding out to the community. I stand there and yeah, I'm standing there on my green screen, but still in that screen in front of me, I'm watching these packages run. I'm watching these videos run. I'm watching these thoughts of these parents. And something comes over me. It's happened 4 or 5 times in the last 3 weeks where I'm listening, you know, to these sound bites of these moms, and my whole demeanor just drains at work 5 seconds before going on camera. And I have to remind myself to snap out of it, but get it back together.
They're running news packages, moms who look like you with sons who have been killed, who look like Bryce, who look like his father, who look like your brother. And then they say, all right, Star, what's going on with the weather?
Yeah, it's hard. It's, I had to stand up in front of my coworkers. I was the only, not only Black woman, but the only Black person working in my first newsroom, at a point in time. And so when, you know, the George Floyd situation happened, I that saying, and you've probably heard it, is we're tired. And I always thought, just hearing it, you know, I had heard so many other people use the term, we're tired. We as a Black people, Black community, African-Americans, we're tired. And I thought to myself, like, how can I be tired from something that doesn't personally, I didn't know George Floyd. But then it didn't take long before that to you know, reside. And I realized I didn't have to know him to feel what everyone else is feeling. And that sense of we're tired is, it is emotionally draining. You feel a sense of connection. I feel like, you know, after hearing the story over and over, and you hear this, his family, his daughter, it's heartbreaking, you know. And I had to get in front of an entire newsroom. I called the meeting. Hey, there's something that I need to say, because I'm uncomfortable. Not that anyone is doing anything to make me uncomfortable. They were all, okay, step back. There was nothing in my face to ever make me feel like I was targeted in my newsroom. No one attacked me or anything like that. I did feel a few people that I worked with were in support. And I think that the ones that weren't, or the lack of, was because they didn't understand. And it's an uncomfortable situation, you know? And I just realized in that situation, you know, my grandpa has always told me, sometimes you're going to have to be that learning experience, you know, that first learning experience, you know, for some white people. And I had to find a space to be comfortable with that, you know, to stand in front of, you know, an entire group of people and say, hey, I'm sad. I come in here every day. And at the end of the day, when I leave this building, I'm not just a news reporter or a weather anchor. I'm Black. I can't shed my skin. I'm here, and you guys all get to do your job and go home. And it's no, at the end of the day, I leave this building and I'm still Black.
Yeah. You're a young Black woman driving home in mostly white Colorado.
Yep. And, I've had some experiences. You know, I'm from LA, so I had never, pre-moving to Colorado, had a one-on-one sort of like racist situation happen to me, or what I felt like, you know, a racist situation. I knew it was out there. I knew it was real. Right. I have a Black brother. I have a Black dad. My son's dad is Black. So I knew it was real, you know, because I would hear stories, you know, but I had never experienced it for myself until I got to Colorado.
Yeah. Growing up in Los Angeles, we're spoiled with diversity. As much that actually still does happen here in this diverse region, we're still spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I didn't realize that until I got there, you know, and I got called, if I can say this, a pretty little Negro girl. You know, the guy was like, well, you know, about time they let a pretty little Negro girl on TV. And I paused. I didn't understand. I'm like, wait, I know I didn't hear what I think I just heard, you know? And so, you know, I wasn't called the N-word with a hard ER at the end, you know, but even still to be called a Negro, like, I'm like, did we just take 50 steps back? I didn't know where we were. I'm like, did this really just happen?
How long into your Colorado experience did that happen?
Oh, I can name 5 or 6 different occasions
That
it did
happen. That particular one, that first one.
First situation, weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
It was within weeks. Wow. It was within weeks of moving there. You know, I knew who the Black people were in your city. You know, it wasn't long before I stood out because I'm on TV, you know?
Right.
You know, and it wasn't always that way. You know, I had plenty of people that were extremely supportive. You know, it's so good to see someone like you on air. It's so good to see someone like you on TV here. It's never happened before, you know, and so many questions arose, you know, like, you know, I had to get to those points where I had braids in my head, you know, and I would have to explain that to the community. Well, you know, it's so unprofessional, you know, and people, and I'm like, no, you know, this is natural for me, you know, and what that means, like, you roll out of bed and your hair is already straight. That's definitely not my situation, you know? And so using those opportunities to explain, and I just wanted to touch on, you know, I literally have to show you this because I struggled with posting this today. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you say that because I struggled with posting it because you are in the media, you know? And so I worry, like, you know, well, am I going to get backlash for feeling how I feel?
Right.
You know? And so literally, I'm going to read that to you, but this is what I wrote on my story before I deleted it. It says,
So you wrote it on your story and then you deleted it because.
And then I deleted it, but then I screenshotted it because I was like, you know, maybe I'll post it tomorrow or maybe when I have a little bit more behind me, I'll post it. So it says, true story. Whenever Bryce is riding in the car with any of my Black family members, friends, or his dad, I'm always on edge. I'm constantly calling to make sure they make it to their destination because God forbid they get pulled over by a police officer. That's a real life situation. That is real life happenings for me. You know, Bryce leaves the house and if he's gone with his dad and I don't hear anything for 4 to 5 hours, oh, better believe I'm calling. I'm just worried. I'm like, okay, did his dad get pulled over? You know, his dad's a gentle giant. He's huge, 6'5", big, you know, and, you know, he's of lighter complexion, but still that don't matter.
Right.
You know, and if you don't know him, he could look very intimidating. And so for me, that's frightful. You know, what if he gets pulled over and he's with his dad and, you know, he's one of these situations where he witnesses his dad, you know, being, you know, murdered or something like that. Or what if he's in the back seat? Because nowadays they're shooting into the cars with kids in the car, you know? And so that's real for me. Or whenever I get a call in the middle of the night from my sisters or my mom, I'm automatically, where's Sam? Sam's my brother. Where's Sam? Is he okay? Like, my mom's like, yo, like, I was just calling you to tell you I loved you, or I was just calling to bother you, or I was just calling to see how your day was. And I'm like, don't do that. Do not call me.
Not at 11 o'clock at night. No.
No, because I freak out.
Yeah.
You know? And so,
I've talked about this on the podcast before with my buddy Jake. I was asking him very similar things like, okay, what kinds of incidents have you experienced over the years? And of course, everybody has a story. Every person of color has at least a few stories, if not dozens of stories. I've never once feared during a traffic stop for my safety or my life. My biggest concern, and barely even that, is will I get a ticket this time? Or will it be like 90% of the other times when I just get off with a warning?
Right.
I'm never asked to get out of the car. There was one time I was asked to get out of the car because I just left a bar, but that has nothing to do with my color. I was probably just swerving a little bit. But either way, I've never once been asked to get out of the car. I've never once been asked to have the car searched, anything like that ever. In fact, we go back to the mid to late 90s. and some friends were driving down to San Diego, and it's a two-car caravan. Somebody in the other car, I didn't see this, but somebody in the other car had like a squirt gun or a toy gun or something like that, and they were pointing it at us. And an off-duty cop saw that and called in his buddies. They shut down the entire freeway while they pulled over the other car, all right? And it's all white people and a couple of Asians. And half hour later, we were all let go. It was just like, hey, please, just be careful. Never once did we fear that we wouldn't live through that experience. The biggest concern at that point was, will they be arrested because of, you know, some sort of reckless endangerment or negligence or whatever? That is the absolute definition of white privilege. Because it is a privilege to think, I'm not going to die when I get pulled over. I'm not going to live. I'm not going to see, you know, my kids again or anything like that. That is a privilege. But the problem is, it should be a right. It should be a right to not fear for my safety or my life just because I got pulled over because I was going 60 in a 45.
Yeah, and oh my goodness, so many things come to mind. I'm literally going to pull Bryce over here so he can tell you what I have told him.
Please.
Okay, we'll get to that in 1 second. But I'd also like to say that I remember there was times that I was riding in the car with Shelby and we got pulled over. She's driving. We're speeding.
Shelby, another student, you worked with her in Colorado. She's now in Fresno, white, long blonde hair. Yeah.
Long blonde hair, green eyes, absolutely gorgeous, you know? And if you don't know Shelby, me and Shelby grew up very similar. Good life, you know? That's her story. But we grew up, I grew up, I grew up in a good neighborhood. I have tons of white friends. I have, you know, never hurt anyone. I've never been in any crazy situations like that. And so for me, even when the cop gets behind me, I freak out. I have a clean record, but when a cop gets behind me, no matter how clean I am, my tags are intact. I have insurance. I have a driver's license. No matter how clean my record is, when a cop gets behind me, I freak out. I'm nervous. I'm scared. You know, and I remember a time where I'm riding in the car with my friend Shelby and we're getting pulled over. We're driving from Aspen back down to Grand Junction, just got done on snow day and having fun and just trying to get back home. We live 2 hours away and we're speeding and we get pulled over. And in that instance, I'm freaking out. Shelby, roll all the windows down so that they're not, Shelby's windows are tinted. Roll all the windows down because if they see me, there it might go crazy, you know, just roll all the windows down so that they're able to see. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. She understands, you know, Shelby's very versed on, you know, the system extremely, yeah. You know, and Shelby minored in Africana studies. So she's very, very, very educated, you know? And so she's like, you're okay. Like, you're fine. I'm going to talk us through this. We'll get us through this and we're going to be fine. And the cop comes to the, you know, they usually come on the passenger side and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know? And he's asking like, oh, insurance, registration, blah, blah, blah. And I just hands up. I'm like, can I reach for the glove compartment? And Shelby's like, girl, and reaches over and opens it. I would have never done that.
No.
I would have never just reached for, you know, but it's a natural, I don't want to be hurt. I want to make it home to my son. I want to make it home to my family. I still have so much more to accomplish. And it's terrible. I've even gotten into the habit where when I see another Black person being pulled over, I'm going to park across the street. I'm going to park in a parking lot. I'm going to be nearby to make sure that they're not in any, you know, devastating situation. You know, there's been plenty of times where I'm walking out of the store. You know, when I visit back home, it's happened twice. I'm in Gardena and I see this young Black kid, you know, getting, you know, patted down by the cops. And I stopped. I had my son with me and we watched. I want to make sure that they're not going to do anything to hurt him. I pull my camera out just in case, you know, it's a real life situation. Now I'm going to have Bryce come tell you one, okay, about toys that he's not allowed to play with. Why? And the things that I have already prepped my 9-year-old on when it comes to police officers.
Okay.
Ricey, yeah. Come here, baby. Let's see if he talks. You never know.
It's just me this time. It's not like when you visited my class recently where it was like 20 faces staring at him. It's just
all
me.
Right. You remember my professor?
You good?
Good.
How do you like Houston so far?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You went to the park.
Yeah, we went to the park.
You went go-karting.
Oh, yeah, we did do that. Oh, yeah, we went to Andretti.
Can you tell Professor Bender what kind of toys you're not allowed to play with?
I'm not allowed to play with guns, and yeah.
Why are you not allowed to play with toy guns?
The George Floyd thing.
And what happens every time somebody else buys you? Like, we allow them to play with, like, Nerf guns, but no. In the house, that's it.
Right.
But what happens if somebody buys you those little ones that, like, from the ice cream truck? What do I always do with them? Mm-hmm. I throw them away, right? And so what has mommy and daddy told you about the cops and black people?
That people are like, let's just say if you're in a car and you're doing nothing wrong, cops can just get crazy really quick and we can shoot, fire, and all that. So,
mm-hmm. And so are you afraid of cops? How do you feel about cops?
I'm not afraid of them, but it's just that when they like put like when they have like when they're putting their gun on like their hand on their gun, that's when you know it's gonna get crazy. So
it makes you a little nervous. How do you feel when we get pulled over when the cops are behind mommy or daddy? How do you feel?
I don't really think anything of it.
Okay, that was it. My interview now.
Bryce, you're the best.
Yeah.
You'd be so good for mommy, okay?
Okay. Yeah, right. That's in the top of the pantry.
Right. But it's reminiscent.
That's a little bit. And we've had full-blown conversations with him.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit of what he remembers.
And when he's not dragged into a Zoom with.
Yeah. Yeah. And we try really hard to, you know, not scare him. Just as you heard, I remind him, like, not all cops are bad.
Right.
That's absolutely not the case. But you need to always be aware. He's not allowed to play with toy guns. There's been a couple occasions where for one of his birthdays, got 4 or 5 of the same Nerf gun. We have none of them. We let him play with them in the house, I think, for that day or two. And we're just setting him up to where that's not something that we do. We don't even entertain or play with toy guns at all.
It's reminiscent of a story I heard told on the Dan Le Batard show after the George Floyd incident last year in Minnesota, where there is on the East Coast somewhere, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the college, but college basketball coach at the end of every practice will set up 4 chairs. In those 4 chairs, he will sit 4 players, a driver, a passenger, and 2 people in the back seat, and they will practice. At the end of basketball practice, they will practice how to act or what to say or what to do if you get pulled over by the cops. Mm. All these different things that as a white guy, never even thought of. Ever, ever, ever. And these are conversations I don't have with my daughters.
Right.
You know, and, you know, with my in-laws, all Filipino, we joke like they take me with them if they want to get somewhere without any kind of shit.
Yep.
And that is so sad. It is so just stupid and wrong and ridiculous.
Yep. That's how I am with Shelby sometimes. I'm like, okay, come on, girl. Like, I need you to talk in the situation for me, or I need you, you know? And it's not a lot of times because I'm going to always be received that way, because there is, you know, the lighter skin versus the darker skin. So I know I'm a lot less intimidating looking than some, you know, black women. But it doesn't change how I feel on the inside, you know, you're receiving me that way. But to me, at the end of the day, I'm still black, no matter how, you know, dark my skin is, or, you know, how straight my hair is for the day. You know, it's real, and it's sad. And I never, yes, honey. Okay. Give me 1 second. I'll do it for you. Watching the Dante Wright situation that just happened, you know, a couple of days ago.
Also in Minnesota. What are they doing up there? What are they doing up there?
20-year-old kid, dad. And you know, just to listen to, you know, I listened to all these, you know, sound bites of his parents and his family. And, you know, they're talking about, we don't come from a broken home. It might not, you know, and this is not verbatim. She did say this is not a broken home. That was definitely something that she stated. And this is not verbatim, but no matter who he was or what he was to anyone else, to us, like, he was still ours, you know, and that's how it would be if anything happened to my brother. You know, on the outside, he might look a certain way to the world, or, but at the end of the day, like, we love him the same. We love him intensely. You know, it's crazy to us, he's perfect. And I couldn't imagine. And every other day you fall into a situation where I found myself in tears on my way to work this morning. And that's when I wrote that, you know, about it's the same situation. Bryce left the house yesterday. I think he was gone until, you know, 9 o'clock, and I'm usually asleep, but you know, he's out and I'm making phone call. I woke up and realized, okay, they're still out. I have to call, you know, it's 9 o'clock. Why isn't he here? Oh, we're still at the park. Like, but to me, like I said, it's scary because you never know.
How have you handled Houston humidity?
Ooh, chow. Okay. I haven't. Okay. If you have a scoreboard between me and Houston humidity, I lose through and through. It's a daily battle. You know, when I first came here, when I was down in Grand Junction, Colorado, no black hairdressers, no one who specializes in black hair. Whereas if, you know, I'm in LA, most black women, not all black women, most, and me included in that pool, we like to switch it up. You know, one day I want to have a bob, one day I want to have a weave down my back, I want to have braids, corn rolls, you know, I want to be wear it natural out afro. And you know, when I got to Colorado, that was not the case, because there's no one that can help me, you know, put these weaves in my hair, or anyone that specialized in lace front wigs. There was none of that, so I initially just went back to wearing braids, which I had to get sort of say like permission to do so. And so for me, you know, you'll see like, you know, a lot in you know, in media. You know, since I've gotten in media, I've seen that a lot. There's this progressive like movement about women wanting to go natural on air. And so for me, I'm all for it, you know, but I like to switch it up. I don't want to have natural hair every day. I like to switch it up. And
well, here in California, you have the Crown Act. And I think it's in many states now.
I think it's in a handful of states. Yeah. And so that just wasn't my battle. I'm like, listen, and it's just from, you know, what I've been taught is choose your battles. I understand that I work in corporate, and I don't know how people feel about it, but I mean, to each their own. For me, I just have decided that it's not my battle, and I want to get to where I'm going. And when I get there and I can call shots about how I am going to and how I'm not going to wear my hair, then I'll do it when I get to that point, but I'm not there yet. And I understand that, and I realize that. But I want to keep climbing, you know, whereas if it's something that I feel so, you know, crazy about, or something that I'm passionate about, maybe I would meet it with the same energy. But how I wear my hair, that's definitely not one of them. Now, if they were like, we want you to do something wild and crazy, then that might be a different story. But yeah, no, when I got to Houston, I told myself when I left Colorado, I was like, I will ditch the braids, because I wore the braids because there was no one there that could do my hair. And the braids seemed to last longer. You know, I could get them done every few months because I'd come back to LA, go back. And so when I got to Houston, there is black hairstylists on every corner. It is literally like walking in heaven. I am just like, what? You have one of everything to do anything, you know? And so that's one of the really like most exciting parts about living in a big city is getting back to the basics, you know? Like, I like to get my nails done, my hair did, my toes, and I like to look good, you know? And so having that opportunity in a big city has been great. And so I decided that I wear wigs on air, or I'll wear a switch between wigs and weaves. And because I don't want to straighten my natural hair, my hair under here is just curly and crazy, and I want to keep it that way and not straighten it and damage it. And so still I will walk out, you know, these are human hair wigs and they're hundreds of dollars, and you know, you think that you're going to curl this up and some hairspray is going to hold it. No, I walk out and it literally will be flat. Like, this had a little curl in it today. And this is what it looks like at 2 o'clock. And that's my story every single day. No matter, I could do my hair at work in the building. That's what a lot of people have told me. Just do it when you get inside and it'll last longer. Absolutely not.
Still doesn't.
Still doesn't. I have figured out my makeup though. I have purchased some of the most great primers that work. They just matte. I have to wear matte makeup. Like everything is matte instead of dewy, like to where you look shiny and all fresh skin. So that I haven't figured out. This hair stuff, it's not my friend. But
if somebody follows you on social media, they're going to see a lot of posts about representation. The idea that you know that little girls and boys who look like you, who look like your son, are watching. They see you. They contact you on a regular basis. And I love that you reach out to them. And it's not just, okay, you see me on TV, that's enough, that's all you get. No, you mentor them, you talk to them. I love that.
Yeah. So for two reasons. One, because I feel like God has given me this gift and it's to give back. You know, I honestly always say that I want to be used in a good way. I want to be like a servant, you know, to other people. You know, I feel like for myself, I took the wildest dream, this is what I've always wanted to do. If I had to pick one thing in the entire world to do as a career, that's what I'm doing right now. And so to know that that is obtainable, I know that there has to be other people out there that are going to grow up maybe thinking the same thing. I have friends that are my age that are still, you know, a little bit afraid to take that step, you know, and it's going to be hard. It's going to kick your butt. It's going to be hard. It's going to knock you down. You're going to get told no. I got told no plenty of times and still didn't leave that doorstep and eventually got into those doors. And so one, it has a lot to do with my spirituality. I believe that God has blessed me and I want to use the opportunity to bless other people. And I feel like if I'm not doing that, I don't want it to be taken away from me. I am every day filled with, like, you know, so much. And so I just want to return that. And two, I would say it's the fact of growing up, I definitely seen, you know, Black women on TV. They were sprinkled here and there, you know, but it did exist, but not to a capacity to where it's like, I felt like I can do this, you know, like I can do this. Whereas even as an adult, I have seen, you know, Black women who are behind the scenes, you know, who are news directors, who are EPs. And I see them, you know, sitting at tables full of, you know, white men. And no offense, like, you know, like no offense to any of my white people out here. I just, to be able to see a Black woman sitting at a table full of 10 to 15 white men who are in positions of power, that is insane to me. You know, and I literally would get caught and just be sitting there like stuck on stupid, like, oh my gosh, like what a boss, like she is a queen, what a boss, yeah. You know? And so a big part of me wants to be that, not because of what it may look like to other people, but not because of, yes, what it looks like to other people, because I want to encourage other people, but not for these fake or phony reasons or to grasp or gain anything, you know, anything like that. I'm not in what I do like for the fame. I'm literally doing it because I'm living my dream. And, you know, I have had plenty of people reach out to me. I have over, I'm going to say about 300 messages. And these are just like from people I don't know, you know, and that's just from within the last like 2 to 3 years. I could go back from when I first started and I didn't even realize how crazy they would come in, you know, but I have all of them saved. I have messages of you've done everything that you said you were going to do. That is the number one message that I receive is you have done everything you said you were going to do. And I am just like blown away that you are actually doing it. And it's so inspiring and it's so motivating when anyone reaches out to me, you know, because I also remember when I decided to chase my weather career, there was so many people that were like, well, I was like, well, how do I do it? And it was just like, it was always a dead end. No one could give me an answer. You go to Mississippi State, you take this class, you take this course, you fill the application. No one could tell me that. It'd be like, well, you just got to get your, you know, your certificate, or you just got it. And it's like, okay, well, how I was like, how do I do that?
Yeah. You know? How do I do so, that while working, while this, while that? Yeah.
And so I will have, I've had so many people within even just the last few months, not so many, maybe like two handfuls that have reached out to me. I am also, I've seen you, I'm already in news, but now I want to switch to weather. What decision did you make? How did you know you wanted to do it? And where did you start? Or I've had people like, hey, I'm thinking of going to school and I think I want to get into weather. I have never declined a phone call. If someone sends me a message and they're not creepy, I usually like read them out, but nine times out of 10, they're not. Like right. Not been anyone that has been like weird or creepy that has asked me, how do I do this? And it goes from, I can tell you better than I can text you. And I've given out my phone number. I will spend, you know, 30 minutes on a phone call with you, explaining to you how I got to where I am and how you can do the same thing. I have, you know, had organizations, you know, nonprofits reach out to me, inner city kids. I've had elementary schools reach out to me. I've had teachers, special ed teachers reach out to me. And they're like, if you could just speak to our class, if you could just come. I've done pre-COVID. I've been in opportunities where I have walked into classrooms and you honestly, I remember one time you got this response from this little girl and she was like, oh my God, she's a girl and she does weather. And I think that was one, like that just lit my heart up inside, you know? And she wasn't a Black girl. She wasn't colored or, you know, it didn't matter though. The fact that at the end of the day, yeah, you take away my color, I'm a woman too, you know? And so that was just pretty, pretty awesome to be able to do that. And I think just, you know, for me, I had in my ear the whole time growing up was my grandma, you could do that. You could do that. And you could do it better than them. Girl, you could do that. Why do you think we named you Star? You know, and so I had those constant reminders. My mom, like, oh, you bad. You got this. You better, you know? And so I always had the support, you know, behind me. But at the same time, they didn't know how to get to where I was going. You know, my parents are not college graduates. And so that's why it's important to me. I want to be, you know, I want to be that person that is approachable, and I will never lose sight of that. You know, everyone, even coming here, I've had, you know, some of my best friends tell me, don't get big headed. Don't. And I'm like, what? Like, that's not me. Like, I will talk to anybody. Like, you know, some of my, I am always, it's so crazy because I'm always the closest, you know, and there's this saying where, you know, I don't know if it's a saying or something that my family taught me, but they're always like, treat the janitor the same way that you are going to treat the CEO.
Yes. Yes.
You want to know how well I knew the janitor at my last job? I have photos with her. I have her text message. I went to her baby shower, you know, and not to say that I just like find, you know.
Hey, where's the janitor? People. You and me, best friends.
No,
let's
not
go.
At all, but that's, you know, and even now, like, you know, I am really good friends with the people that are behind the scenes at my job, yeah. You know, the people that make me look good on TV, the directors, the camera people, the, you know, if we're in that building, everyone's a big deal. You know, we've all made it, no matter, you know, and I may not know your story, but I feel happy when I'm walking in here. So I'm gonna just be happy with you, you know? And so, yeah, one, two, pretty much live out, you know, my, you know, the grace and the blessings that God has shown me and return that. And then also just let all the other little, you know, if they're not Black girls, just girls, like girl power, you know, like we all have the same 24 hours in a day as Beyonce. So, you know, and my mom would always say, like, whenever anything bad is going on, she'll be like, someone probably took that same situation that you're complaining about and killed it. You know, yeah. Like they figured it out. So
where can people find you on social media? How should they follow you? Instagram, Twitter, whatever you've got.
Yeah. So I have my personal Instagram, which is The Weather Star. And that's where you'll find a lot of stuff random. You know, what I'm doing throughout the day, my son, me being funny with my memes and my gifts. and then my work handles for Instagram is Star Harvey WX, And it is the same on Twitter, and it is the same on Facebook, Star Harvey WX.
Thank you, Star. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I've put all of Star's links in the show notes, all of mine as well, or just go to AaronBender.com. Please subscribe to the Aaron Bender Podcast on YouTube for exclusive video content, and like the Aaron Bender Podcast on Facebook. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, AaronBenderMedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.